It was all a matter of timing, I could see. He'd waited for the exact moment when the thermals would behave the way he wanted, working with him rather than against him. As he fell deeper, it was almost as if they were nudging him helpfully away from the chasm walls. A screen in the middle of the room was relaying a side-on image of Voronoff, captured by what must have been a flying camera chasing him down the chasm. Other diners were following his trajectory with opera glasses, telescopic monocles, and elegant lorgnette binoculars. "Is there a point to this?" I said. "Risk," Sibylline said, "and the thrill of doing something new and dangerous. If there's one thing the plague's given us, it's that. The opportunity to test ourselves, to stare death in the face. Biological immortality won't help you much if you've just hit a rock face at 200 kilometers per hour. Why do they do it, though? Doesn't potential immortality make your lives all the more precious?" "Yes, but that doesn't mean we still don't need to be reminded of death, now and then. What's the point of beating an old enemy if you deny yourself the thrill of ever remembering what it was like in the first place? Victory loses its meaning without the memory of what you've vanquished."
"But you could die."
She looked up from the menu.
"All the more reason not to cock up your timing, then."
Voronoff was nearing the end of his fall. I could barely see him now.
"He's picking up tension now," Fischetti said, "beginning to slow down. See how beautifully he's timed it."
The line was stretched almost to its limit, now starting to arrest Voronoff's fall. But his timing was as good as his admirers had evidently been expecting. He disappeared for 3 or 4 seconds, vanishing into the whiteness before the coil began to contract, hauling him back up towards us.
"Textbook," Sibylline said.
There was more applause, but in contrast to before, this time it was wildly enthusiastic. People began to hammer their cutlery in appreciation of Voronoff's fall.
"You know what?" Waverley said. "Now that he's mastered mist jumping, he'll get bored and try something else even more insanely dangerous. You mark my words."
"There goes the other one," Sibylline said, as the last jumper stepped away from the balcony.
"Timing looks good, better than the woman's anyway. You'd have thought he'd have the decency to let Voronoff come back up first, wouldn't you?"
"How will he get back up?" I said.
"He'll haul himself up. There's some kind of motorized winch in his harness."
I watched the last jumper plummet into the depths. To my untrained eye, the jump looked at least as good as Voronoff's. The thermals didn't seem to be steering the man towards the sides, and his posture as he dropped looked amazingly balletic. The crowd had quietened down now and were watching the fall intently.
"Well, he's no amateur," Fischetti said.
"He just copied Voronoff's timing," Sibylline said. "I was watching the way the vortex affected the gliders."
"You can't blame him for that. You don't get marks for originality, you know."
He dropped further still, his harness a glowing green dot receding towards the mist.
"Wait," Waverley said, pointing to the uncoiling line on the balcony. "He should have run out of line by now, shouldn't he?"
"Voronoff had by this point," Sibylline agreed.
"Silly fool's given himself too much," Fischetti said.
He took a sip from his wine glass and studied the depths with renewed interest.
"It's reached the limit now, but it's much too late."
He was right. By the time the glowing green dot reached the level of the mist, it was falling almost as quickly as ever. The screen showed a last, side-on view of him vanishing into the whiteness, and then there was only the taut filament of his line. Seconds passed. First the 3 or 4 that Voronoff had taken before emerging, and then 10, and then 20.